This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't the bottom, blood judgment. My own sweet time didn't teach what I found. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated.
Welcome back, episode 150. That is crazy. Oh my God, 150 episodes. We're here. We did it. That is nearly 3 years. I never thought I'd make it this far. I remember when I first started the podcast, how bad at editing I was. I didn't know what I was doing talking to people. I really faked it until I maked it. And here we are now, episode 150, and so many people to thank. But I want to thank, first and foremost, you, wherever you are in the world, listening to this podcast. If you're at work, if you're in the car, if you're taking a walk, maybe a run, maybe just literally just doing nothing, sitting on your couch, jamming this thing. It doesn't matter. You are the reason that this thing has existed up to 150 episodes. Wow. Thank you so much. And to celebrate a great episode with a guest that a lot of people wrote in about, a lot of people said, you got to get this guy on the show. And he's here. Spencer Charnas of Ice Nine Kills, a band that has been somewhat under the radar, I feel, until now. They have a new record, The Silver Scream. It is out. It is out now. It just came out. It is turning heads. People are calling it album of the year, and it is definitely a very, very cool record with some great songs and a very cool concept as well. Spencer and I chat all about that and other stuff. It is a great, great chat. I'm very proud to have this one be episode 150. Before we get into that, as always, if you want to get in touch with me, if you want to congratulate me on this milestone, yeah, feel free. LeadSingerSyndrome@gmail.com is the email address. I read all my emails. I try to write back to everybody, too. And I definitely do, you know, take all the comments to heart. And so if you have suggestions for upcoming guests to the show, or really anything at all, feel free just to hit me up on there. Also, I'm on all the social media stuff, you know, like I say every week, Instagram, Twitter, and we have Facebook page. Don't forget about Facebook. They're going to steal your personal information and do all these horrible things to you. But you know what? Just go like our page anyways, because it's good for me. Okay. What else? We also have the All Access Club. Okay. So if one episode every week is not enough, if you need more bonus content, if you want interaction with me, interaction with other fans of the show, merchandise, patches shipped to your house every 3 months, question and answer sessions with me, we run contests, we're doing a Secret Santa this year. It just is an awesome community of like-minded individuals that we all love music, we all love, you know, cool stuff. So hey, hit that up. It really is, it's going to make your life better, I promise. Head over to LeadSingerSyndrome.com/all access. That is the link. And as little as $6 a month, it gets you in. And that's like, I mean, come on. That's not very much money. What is that? That's pennies a day, as they say. Again, I'll plug the link one more time. It is LeadSingerSyndrome.com/all access. Did I mention this is episode 150? Blows my mind. I love it. Right now, in my life, I am in Europe. I'm sitting in Hanover. No hangover in Hanover, which is nice. Didn't drink last night. Voice is feeling a little raspy from this tour we're doing with Anti-Flag. I'm pushing it a little hard, but it has been a great tour. We've sold out the first 4 shows on this run, heading into Germany, which, I mean, I think people probably know by now, is maybe my favorite country to tour in the world. So, yeah, if you're in Germany, come out. Come hang with us at Anti-Flag. It's a great tour. Cancer Bats and Warriors are also there. We're also going to be in Netherlands and in Belgium. We're doing a couple crazy shows with like Less Than Jake and a couple other bands. Real Big Fish, I think, are jumping on to do, you know, some shows with us as well. So it's going to be a really good time. It's just great. And of course, after this, we're going, my band Silverstein, that is, we're going to the U.S. to do a big tour, and it's celebrating our first record, which is 15 years old. Special guests Hawthorne Heights and As Cities Burn and Capstan. We're playing the whole dang record from start to finish. Then we're doing a second greatest hit set, not to be missed. So go get tickets. They are flying off the shelves. Believe me, we've sold out a lot of shows. Second Toronto show added, though, which is going to be a very cool way to finish in our hometown. So get tickets when brokenisEasilyFixed.com. So I think that just about covers it. But yes, again, I want to thank everybody at Jabberjaw Media, everybody that's worked there for 3 years, whether you started there and left, whether you've been there since the beginning. Everybody there has been so helpful to me for launching this show, keeping it going, and just being the finest people. So thank you to everybody over there, especially Mike Mowry for being the commander-in-chief. I want to especially thank all of the members of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. You know who you are. I know who you are. I just love you guys. Thank you so much for the love, the support. And again, I just want to thank you for listening to this wherever you are. Hit me up. Send me an email. Let me know how you've been enjoying the show. And I really do appreciate that so much. All right, let's jump in. It's a long intro. Here's my talk with Spencer of Ice Nine Kills. Drowning all losses, drowning all mistakes, fueled by the flood we pay in blood, the curse of Crystal Lake. He's down the deep missing. We found there's no escape. You just scratched the surface of the curse of Crystal Lake. Contrast, we will lie to rest.
Hello?
Hello, Spencer.
What's up, Shane?
Hey, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for doing this short notice. I know it must be a crazy busy week for you.
Oh, no problem, man. I've always wanted to do the podcast.
And here we are. And I feel
there
like...
There we are.
I know. We've been talking about it. I've been talking with Mike, you know, about doing it for a long time. And I feel like it's almost better that we waited because so much is about to happen. You know what I mean? It's the perfect time to talk.
No, definitely. Yeah, we got the album coming up in less than a week. So, yeah, we got a lot to talk about.
It is Monday morning right now, and the album comes out on Friday. And the Silver Scream, I feel like this is like your, I don't even know how to say it. This is like the magnum opus or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's obviously every record you put out as a band. And like, I hate the cliche interviews, like, this is the best thing we ever put out, or you know, we put so much more into this record than we've ever put into a record before, which you hear every time a band puts out a record. But with you guys, it's literally true.
Oh, thank you, yeah.
there's a lot to talk about and a lot to digest. I mean, I don't even know if we should jump in right away. I feel like it's Monday morning and the Patriots just... One, after everyone was freaking out that they were going to blow their season. So maybe we should start with some football.
We'll start with some football. Looks like Brady's back. He found his groove again, I guess.
Brady's back. Well, it was the Dolphins, but everyone's like, no, man, the Dolphins are, I think they were 3-0. Everyone's like, oh, the Dolphins are going to beat the Patriots. I was like, no way, dude. I would bet so much money on that. And of course, what was it like? It was just a... they got their face kicked in, dude. It was brutal.
Yeah, I don't know. The Patriots just can't. They always bounce back. They always seem to win. I don't know. I think they made a deal with the devil or something. I'm not sure what's going on there.
This horror stuff just creeps into every aspect of your life.
Every aspect, man.
Even football.
Even football, yeah. The devil, devil's definitely got Brady's back, I think.
Dude, you should get Bill Belichick in one of your videos just to play some creepy-ass dude. It would work.
That would work. the only other Patriot work with Aaron Hernandez because he was a murderer. But
yeah. Ooh, dark. Yeah, you went there.
I went there.
Oh, yeah. Damn. Well, dude, hey, so you're in, I guess you're on the West Coast now. You've moved out to L.A., originally from Boston. How's the sunshine treating you?
Dude, I love it. I've always wanted to be on the West Coast, you know. My dad sort of told me, like, almost 10 years ago, he was just telling me, you gotta move to L.A., you know, you're in the music business, you know, there's so much that's going on there revolving around that, so many people to meet, and I was like, yeah, Dad, I'll eventually get there, and 10 years later, I really do regret not moving out here sooner, you know. I mean, you know, I love the East Coast, I'm an East Coast guy, but, you know, I was there for so long, it was definitely time for a change, and I love everything about it. It's always nice to go back home. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely something special out here in terms of, you know, what we're doing, and great weather all the time, great restaurants, and I can't say enough good things about it.
Absolutely, man. So let's start with the beginning, if you don't mind. I want to get into the new record and everything else that you guys have going on, touring and everything. But I figure let's just start at the beginning, first time on the show. So you grew up in Massachusetts, and it sounds like, you know, you're just talking about your dad. I know you were very close with your family early on and still are. So what was it like for you growing up in Massachusetts? What was your family structure like, and how was music kind of ingrained into you in the early part of your life?
Well, it's interesting, you know, no one really in my family were musicians. You know, my parents always loved music, and I remember, you know, my dad always playing like bands like Queen on, you know, cassette tape when we would go to hockey. I'm actually a hockey guy too. I know you guys are big hockey guys.
Well, I'm from Canada, so like you have to be.
Of course, you have to be. Yeah. So I grew up playing youth hockey, and was really into that. But I always had this love of music. It really started for me with Nirvana. You know, I have an older sister that was, you know, about 6 years older than me. So it kind of trickled down from whatever her and her friends would listen to. So I was always a little bit ahead of my time in the sense that, I was the kid in fourth and fifth grade, you know, telling my friends, oh, you got to check out, you know, Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Soundgarden, all these bands that were, you know, from sort of like the Seattle scene. And
right. Yeah,
I was
sure.
big into watching MTV. And, you know, I would be the kid in class with, like, you know, the White Zombie shirt down to my knees because none of the shirts fit me. So I was always into that. Pretty much started playing guitar because of, you know, Kurt Cobain. I wanted to be Kurt Cobain. So I started, a cover band. And, you know, I'm talking, we're real young, you know, like fourth and fifth grade. And the other kids at, like, the talent show were playing, I don't know, you know, more like classically driven music or something that, you know, they would learn from their piano teacher during a piano lesson. And my band would get up there and, you know, we played like, you know, Dive by Nirvana and Tomorrow by Silverchair and, you know, like Alice in Chains covers. So I was always into it really, really young. And, you know, then from there really got into, like, I was a big Korn fan. You know, I went to, like, the first Family Values tour in 97, I think.
Nice.
And from there, you know, really got into punk music. You know, some of the first punk bands I liked were, you know, from the Epitaph scene, you know, like NoFX. And I loved bands like Goldfinger and Real Big Fish and Less Than Jake, the whole Warped Tour scene.
Yeah.
And, basically, you know, I was always playing in cover bands, and then I went to a Goldfinger show. It was Goldfinger and Mest my freshman year in high school, and something about that show just changed everything for me, the energy of it. And I got up on stage, and John Feldman and him ended up giving me the mic to sing a line from Mabel, and I started the band that night. I've got a tattoo behind my ear of the date of that show.
Love it.
And that's where it sort of it all began.
Where was that show? Was it a Palladium or something?
Yeah, it was at the Worcester Palladium. It was actually the first time I ever went to the Palladium. And it was just an amazing show.
That's cool.
And since I've been back there and, you know, played the Palladium many times. So that venue holds a very special place.
Oh, it's
place
totally, man. I love that story. And it's a similar, I'm from Toronto, and for me, it's the Opera House here in Toronto that I've seen that I've seen, you know, all the bands, and we're playing Silverstein, we're playing the Opera House later this year, you know, for the last day of our tour, and you guys are playing the Palladium very soon for a CD release show. Isn't it? Is it the 11th you guys are playing?
Yeah.
So just so in
it's
about
all like
10
full
days.
Circle.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful thing when as fans of music, we you know, and kids, we get to do this in adulthood and still have this, you know, so much sentimental value with a place. And I mean, that's the thing. Like, if they ever close the doors on the Palladium or the Opera House or, you know, those kinds of venues, it would be very sad.
Dude, definitely. And the first time I ever saw Silverstein was at the Palladium. With Senses Fail. I think it was probably like 2004, 2005.
Yeah, 2004. 2004.
Yeah, and it was a great show.
Well, thank you. That's crazy.
I think Madison may have been there on that show.
Yeah. Oh my God, Madison. Yeah. I forgot.
Was
about
it Name
that
Taken
band.
Too? I don't know if
it
Name
could,
Taken.
It could
was
have
on
been
the-
Name Taken. They're a band that we played quite a bit with. Was it Emmanuel too?
Oh man, it might have been. I always loved Emmanuel as well.
Emmanuel, one of those just very, very underrated bands. That first Emmanuel
totally
record
did.
still holds. I still throw it on from time to time.
Still soundtrack a to a head rush.
That's it. Yeah, great record.
Yeah, great sounding record too. I always loved how the bass sounded on that record. Yeah. Especially on like Make Tonight, I was like, that's the bass tone that I want.
That band is incredible, dude. You know your shit. So let me get this straight. So you were in grade 4 or grade 5 playing in, let's just say, you know, like a grunge band. How did you acquire there's some steps that took place to get you there. How did you get a guitar? Did you take lessons? Did your like parents, obviously they were instrumental in that at such a young age. How did that kind of happen?
My parents were just always really, really cool. You know, they always encouraged me for whatever I wanted to do. You know, whether it was waking up at 6 a.m. on a Saturday to take me to, an ice rink to play on my team, or buying me guitars. And, they were just always really supportive of whatever I was doing. And I think, the first time I had lessons, I had a teacher. His name is Mr. Shepherd. I always remember that. He's a great music teacher at my school that I went to. And every week I would go and take lessons from him. And he was great. You know, he would show me all the basics, like, you know, the pentatonic scales and modes and stuff. But the part of the lesson that I was always really excited about was the end, because that's when I would take out whatever CD I was currently cranking at the time and have him teach me how to play the song. You know, this was before I was, you know, really well versed with the internet. You know, at the time, I think it was just starting to really take off, and there wasn't tabs weren't readily available yet. So I would count on him to show me, you know, how to play, you know, Offspring's Come Out and Play or something like that. And that was my favorite part of the lesson.
I love that.
And and from there, it was like before I had really started a band, I would go to this arts festival at my school they would have every year. And at the end of the night, bands would get up and play. And there was one band, they were a bit older than us, and they were playing like Breed by Nirvana. And I think they played an Offspring song. And then I was like, man, we got to get our own cover band together.
Right.
And then we started, I think we were called the Electric Pancakes, I think was the name of the band. Okay.
That sounds like a totally like a band name of that era. Of that
totally,
age.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great. So, I mean, obviously, too, a big part of your band, your life, is literature, film, especially the horror genre. That has just been a huge part of your career. When did that kind of start to become such an important part of your life? It must have been at a pretty young age as well, I assume.
Yeah, you know, with literature, again, it sort of trickled down from my sister. She was a big Kurt Vonnegut fan.
Oh, yeah.
And,
this makes sense with the band name, yes.
Right.
Cat's Cradle.
Exactly. So I was trying to figure out what to call our band, and she said, you know, you got to check out this novel, Cat's Cradle. And there's, you know, there's this substance called Ice Nine, and it essentially, you know, has the power to destroy the world. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. So from there, you know, I really got into that. And you know, in high school and in middle school, you'd have books you'd have to read. So at first it kind of turned me off because it was just like, you know, a chore, like homework. But then I started to really get into it and realize there was, you know, awesome books like Dracula, you know, Animal Farm, another book that I think that was one of the ones that got me into reading early because someone sort of said, hey, this book is so short, you could finish it in like an hour. I was like, okay, I'll check it out. So that's where the literature kind of started to rear its head in my interests. And as far as horror, again, at a very young age, probably 7 or 8, I would go to the grocery store with my mom, and to kill time, I would go into this VHS video store back when those were a thing that was attached to the grocery store. And while she was doing her shopping, I would go in there, and for whatever reason, I was just drawn to the aisle that said horror, you know? I would look at the covers of these VHS tapes like Halloween and Friday the 13th and, you know, some of the more more obscure ones like, you know, Sleepaway Camp. And it was just like, this seems so badass. You know, I'm, you know, 8-year-old kid looking at this stuff. I was like, what is this? I got to see it. And again, my parents were really cool and let me see those movies. And I think they assumed, hey, he'll grow out of it and, you know. 25 years later, I'm talking on the phone about it right now. So
Yeah, I know. It's funny how that works out, right?
Yeah.
I was gonna say earlier, and I didn't. I said, and now I think it would maybe be a cool name for a pop punk band. I was like, it would be funny instead of Ice Nine Kills if you called your band the Chalfamadorians.
Oh, I like that.
It would be a good name for it would be a good name for like a pop, like a pop punk band. I think it would work.
I'll have to start a pop punk band. I like pop punk.
There you go.
Have me on for
a guest spot if you ever end up doing it.
I'm in.
Yeah. No, it's a similar story to me too. And it's funny, I guess, like because when you know, I'm not sure how much younger you are than me, but it doesn't sound like very much. Like I'm 37. You got to be
32.
You're in your 30s. Yeah. So it's the same, you know, we grew up in the same era, and that whole idea of going to the video store is such a lost art on kids these days, you know, because everything's like, I'm going to like look on Netflix for a half an hour to figure out what I'm going to watch. And now it used to be, I'd go to the video store and I'd look around for like a good 45 minutes to decide what one or two movies I was going to rent. And it was like, you'd go in the different sections and I remember going into the horror section in my little video store, you know, around the corner and seeing movies. Like one of the ones I remember renting, which was not the best, was The Blob. You know, I just wanted to watch it because it had like a ridiculous, you know, movie box or whatever.
Right.
But all that stuff you could watch. And I remember one of the scariest movies I ever, still to this day, probably one of the greatest, was the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Of course.
You know, and those are all movies that I watched, you know, around that age just because I was like, I don't know, what's this? And I never knew what it was. I just saw the box and took it home and watched it. There was no internet to tell me what it was. And like some of those movies scared the shit out of me, like Pet Cemetery. That movie freaked me out, dude, when I watched it when I was like, I don't know, probably like 9 or 10.
No, absolutely, man. And you're right. I miss the whole vibe of being in a video store and walking around to the aisles, and it's like you had to sort of take a chance because with Netflix,
you know,
you're watching a movie and like within 2 minutes you're like, this sucks. All right, I'm done with it. But you really had to take sort of a leap of faith, and the cover art was so important, and it really sold you on what you were going to get that night. And I really do miss and cherish the memories of, you know, I remember specifically, you know, going to Florida on vacation like every Christmas, and my cousins and I would go to Blockbuster every single night and rent something new. And I agree with you. I miss those days. That's why I think that, you know, while Netflix and all those things are, you know, convenient, you know, sometimes progression is like regression sometimes. Like, I don't know. I just miss the good old days of the movie stores.
No, I know. It's lost, especially now. Like, I don't know, you're on Netflix and there's like a percentage that you're going to like the movie or whatever. Like, oh, this is a 98% match. It's like, that didn't happen when you walked into a store and tried to grab a VHS tape. And And like, I remember the times when you like someone would forget to rewind it, and you just put the tape in, and then it would start in the middle. Like, oh, I guess that character's gonna die. Great. Okay. Well, I'll rewind the movie now and watch it anyways. You know, like those are things no one remembers even. You know that used to happen. So
yeah, that's probably the only thing I don't miss is having to rewind the tape. That's the only thing I don't miss.
It was never good. What movie back from those days, your early days, was there any that really either scared you or made a huge impact on you that you just thought about over and over and over again and maybe you still think about?
Well, for me, the holy grail of the slasher genre, which is my favorite genre of horror, would be Halloween. Mm-hmm. And I believe that was the first one I ever saw. And there was just something so terrifying about, you know, being 8 years old and seeing that white mask and John Carpenter's score, you know, obviously, which is unbelievable, like sort of like the definition of iconic horror music. It really scared the shit out of me. And that's what really, really got me into the genre. And from then, of course, all the Friday the 13th and more obscure ones like Silent Night, Deadly Night. So I was a really big fan for years, and then another movie that really sort of reinforced my love of the genre was in 1996. And at that point, the only horror movies I'd ever seen were on VHS, or maybe, you know, I would catch something on cable or something. So I went to the theater to see Scream.
Oh, of course.
And I'm one of the only people who was like, you know, my age that can say I saw Scream in the theater. You know, everyone's seen Scream, but I was 11 at the time.
Wow.
And my parents took me to – yeah, I was young, yeah. As I said, my parents were cool. But, you know, we were on vacation in Florida, and everyone was buzzing about it at the beach saying, oh, man, people are saying, like, this is the best horror movie since Halloween. So I was like, shit, I got to see this. So I went into the theater, and, like, from, like, the like maybe 30 seconds in or something – or a minute in.
Oh,
the
killer, first scene is so iconic.
Yeah,
I mean,
so amazing. And the killer is talking about Halloween and Friday the 13th, and I'm thinking to myself, oh,
right.
I'm in a horror movie, and the killer is referencing Jason and Michael. And right there, I was like, dude, this is going to be my favorite movie of all time. And it really still to this day is one of my favorites of all time. And that just kind of, again, just reinforced my love of the genre.
Totally.
And to me is one of the best slasher movies of all time because it's so self-referential. And not only is it funny, it really at the time was so scary, I thought.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's and so many classic scenes now. It's funny, yeah. Like at the time, it was almost like, I don't know how to say it. Like it was... Because it was like a spoof of the genre in a way, you know what I mean? And
right.
It was like he was, and especially as Wes Craven, you know, so he's almost like referencing his own work in a way. So it almost seems like, I don't know, like a trick, like a gimmick, you know?
Right.
At the time, a little bit. And I was like 15, I guess, when it came out. I didn't see it in the theaters, but I saw it, you know, probably right when it came out on video. And I remember thinking it was a little bit like... Like I was old enough still to understand that was a little gimmicky, but I still liked it, you know.
Right.
Absolutely. It's funny, you know, your new video for what was the last one you put out? The long one.
We did Grave Mistake. Thank God
Grave Mistake.
Friday.
Yeah, Grave Mistake. And it's funny, you know, when you're like the beginning of the video when you're leaning into the car. You know, talking to the private investigator or whatever, like whatever the concept is, the therapist. I really got a vibe from Scream. You know, when the boyfriend's at the window, you know, like leaning
in. Yeah.
In fact, I almost felt like you kind of look like him a little bit.
Well, dude, that's one of the best compliments I've ever been given. Because honestly, dude, that's what I was going for. That
you were going for that? 100%. Yeah, I totally right away was like, this reminds me of that scene in Scream when he's at the bedroom window.
No, 100%. I'm glad you said that because what I was trying to get across was that Billy Loomis vibe of the exact character you're describing. So, well, thank you.
No, you nailed it. Hey, man, I got to plug in my computer. Can you hang on 1 second?
No problem.
Thanks.
With Shane, I'm on the porch.
I got 40% when I start, and now it's at 4%. Fucking Apple, man. We're good now.
It's all bullshit.
We're good now.
I feel like there's some guy at that factory just pressing a button saying, okay, all these phones that were bought this time, they're just not going to work anymore.
I mean, didn't they kind of admit that that's a thing?
Yeah, they got caught, but I think we all knew that it was all bullshit.
Jeez. Yeah, man. So the new album, for the people that don't know, and it comes out on Friday, it'll already be out by the time this comes up. So go check it out. One of the coolest things, I think, is you know, it's a concept album, and every song is about a specific horror film. And what are you doing now? What are you doing back there?
I'm sorry. I'm trying to plug my computer in.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, you can't be too careful. You know, they'll get you. It's the man with the button.
Yeah. So, I'm excited about the concept.
Yeah, man. But my question is just about how you actually recorded vocals in some iconic horror locations. Now, that's cool, and that's like a cool thing to tell people, and oh my God, this is like authentic. But how do you actually logistically work that out to say, okay, I want to record... I don't know. Tell me what you did. How did you do that?
So basically, it was all just done secretly. You know, I wasn't going to knock on their door and be like, hey, can I? I'm a crazy musician that loves horror films. Can I borrow your bathroom for a few hours and record some music? So basically, what I did is I just brought a little setup, and I kind of snuck around the property. Like, I went on the lawn of what is 1428 Elm Street from Nightmare on Elm Street. That's not actually the street Elm Street, but it is the number, which is the iconic number from the series, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just snuck on the property, and you know, if someone would walk by walking a dog, I just kind of pretend like I was just, you know, maybe like a landscaper. I don't know why a landscaper would have
screaming as loud as you can.
Yeah. I don't know why a landscaper would have a microphone and no landscaping equipment, but I don't know. I'm pretty quick on my feet, so I might have been just like, yeah, I'm just kind of waiting for my buddies, blah, 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 to bring the equipment. So that's what I did, and I did that. Also did it in Pasadena at the original Michael Myers house.
Yeah.
And, you know, this was all sort of like not post-production, but, you know, I had wrapped most of the vocals on the record. So it was just like little tidbits to get in there. Some of like the really creepy, like whispering stuff that we put on the record. So for me, it was more about, you know, I didn't record like the main vocal of a chorus on someone's lawn, but it was like the little like ear candy, the creepy stuff, just so that we could get audio on the actual tracks that was recorded at the property.
That's very cool.
Yeah,
it must have channeled a certain vibe and feeling too. Like, you know, because you're a fan of, let's just take Halloween for example, right? You're a huge fan of the film. You've written a song based on the films, which obviously means a lot to you. And then there you are standing there. Like, that must have been a very cool feeling to try to channel and evoke a certain emotion in you that hopefully gets conveyed to the song, to the album.
Oh, absolutely, man. And I had visited those locations in the past. I remember, you know, the first time like being, you know, near the Michael Myers house, it just floored me, you know. And, you know, some people don't understand that kind of stuff, and I get that. But, you know, for real diehard horror fans or fans of cinema, when you go to the actual location of your favorite movies, it's just like, I don't know, it's sort of like a chill-inducing moment, at least for me. And that's what, you know, I'm hoping to get from the reaction of the album.
Absolutely.
And I love the fact that people are, you know, finding out about, you know, that I did do that and sort of went the extra mile. Because at the end of the day, you know, I'm a fan of bands and I'm a fan of film, and I try to think about what I would want and what stories I would want to hear surrounding an album of my favorite band.
No, totally. And you guys have constantly, I feel like, in terms of your popularity, it's been a very slow and steady climb. You know, you guys have gained popularity over so many years without having, you know, a big hit or a huge tour or something, you know, big happening. And okay, all of a sudden they're on this level. It's been so consistent. That must be nice, but also maybe you don't feel like you get the credit you deserve for how much you really like thought and work and time and everything you put into this band.
Definitely, man. You know, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. You know, there are many, many years where it was a very frustrating process. You know, we would get to a certain level and then, you know, something would hold us back, either being like, you know, a label that we were attached to for a long time years ago was sort of like a big anchor weighing us down and we couldn't really do anything about it.
Yeah.
There were definitely, you know, many years where we felt like, yeah, you know, we think we're good. You know, why isn't it working? Like, why can't we get this tour? Why can't we do this? But a few years ago, that feeling just started to just like dissipate. And it was even sort of before things started to go really well. And it just, I sort of came to the point where it's like, you know what, I'm just having fun. You know, I'm not going to worry too much about this tour or if this label likes us. And I'm just going to start to do what I want. And honestly, that's really when we started to see a bit more success. When we stopped worrying about what other bands were doing or stopped worrying about what are the things we need to include in a quote-unquote metalcore song or
right.
Is this heavy enough? And we just started to say, like, let's just do some crazy shit. And, you know, I don't think, you know, by any means we're the most original band to ever play metalcore. But I think, you know, we're trying to do something, whether it be, you know, the concept or, you know, including overly theatrical stuff. That we're trying to do something a little bit different to give our fans something exciting, because at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make it so that our fans who we love really have something to say, hey, you know, check this. You got to check this band out, man. This is something that's really helping me escape from reality on this week.
Absolutely. And I think in some ways, you know, this album coming out on Friday, you know, being the, I don't remember what I said earlier, magnum opus, which is a little ridiculous, but you know, it like, you know, if you were a kid and you found out about your band, let's say maybe you saw you guys on Warped Tour or, you know, in the last little while and they're like, oh, they have this new album coming out. It really is. This album is really like everything that you guys are encompassed into a record. So in a way, I feel like this is going to be the breakthrough album. This is going to be the album that all your fans are like, why is this band not bigger? And they're going to tell all their friends who are going to tell all their friends. And I think of that Wayne's World thing, you know, tell their two friends who tell their two friends. But it's a real thing. And then I think it's going to kick off, you know, for you guys. So, I mean, are you guys expecting a big first week? Are you expecting things to climb to the next level when this album comes out? Or are you just kind of,
you know, managing your expectations? I don't want to set my expectations too high, but you know, I'll definitely say that I've seen things on the lead up to this album that I've never seen before,
right.
As far as just, you know, numbers, you know, getting into the metrics of things. I mean, you're in the business, so I'm sure you look at that stuff. Just things like, you know, at the beginning of Warped Tour, we had like, you know, 300,000 monthly Spotify listeners, which isn't bad.
No, and now it's like 800,000.
It's like to see that jump, you know, almost to the point where it's three times as much in just a few months. And it's definitely exciting. And I'm very optimistic, I guess I would say. And we've got some really cool tours on the horizon, one of which I can't announce because it's, you know, won't be announced for months. That will be our biggest tour we've ever done with some of the biggest bands we've ever done. So I'm really excited, man. But you know, as cliche as it sounds, like if it ended tomorrow, I really would be proud of what we've done and what we've accomplished. You know, things like, you know, in 2008, you know, we snuck on the entire Warped Tour because they wouldn't put us on. And we sold CDs every day in the blistering sun. So actually sold like 10,000 CDs doing that. Yeah. So to come full circle and, like, you know, 10 years later be playing on the last one to really big crowds, and it's just one of those full circle moments where I'm sort of just appreciating all those things that I hope we'd eventually attain.
Absolutely. No. And to talk about some more numbers, The American Nightmare already has over 3 million plays on Spotify. That's, like, pretty insane for, you know, a standalone, like, well, not a standalone single. I assume the song is going to be on the album, but, you know, a single you guys put out already is your number one track and has that many streams. What do you think it is about that song that's resonated with people already?
I think that, the way in which we rolled it out, we tried to be really sort of cryptic about what we were doing. And from sort of the onset of writing the song, I always pictured, because it's about Nightmare on Elm Street and Freddy Krueger, using like the American flag, but instead of the stripes of, our flag, Freddy's stripes. So I think that there was something cool about the marketing of that. And, I think it's one of my favorite choruses I've ever written, sort of like that kind of four on the floor thing, which we've never really experimented with. And I don't know. I mean, we just went into it saying, like, let's make a ripper, man. And the kids seem to like it. But it's like, if you had the formula to make, a song that connects with people, you would do it every single song. So sometimes it's just like lightning strikes for some reason. What I mean?
Of course.
Lightning in a bottle.
You can't do it every time, because if you did it every time, it wouldn't be special anymore, right?
Exactly.
So there has to be a certain amount of that. So I know you're keeping some of this information about the record a little bit close to your chest, which I think is cool for your fans. You're not talking about, which songs are with which movies and something like that. But I'm wondering if you'll give me the exclusive on one of the tracks and one of the movies and what it's about. If you maybe something you haven't talked about yet.
Absolutely.
Just for some of your fans that tune into this.
Yeah, especially because, it'll be after the album comes out. That's
exactly.
Fine.
Yeah. So maybe you already have done your track by track, or, given alternative press everything because they want everything. But I'm just kidding. But, giving it to some outlet. But it would be cool if you just did, give me something here. I think your fans would appreciate it. Give me a reason to tune in.
No, definitely. I'm trying to think, what's been such a fun part of the process is that we hadn't revealed, what they were all about. I sort of just posted the track listing. And what I like to do is try to make, clever song titles and maybe allude to what song is about which film. So seeing kids guess. But I'm not really sure if anyone has gotten that the song Freak Flag is about The Devil's Rejects. I don't know if anyone has actually gotten that correct, so that would be exclusive.
Cool.
Also, the song Love Bites is about an American werewolf in London.
Oh yeah.
And so I've seen a lot of people get that wrong. So there you go.
There you go. From the horse's mouth. Talk about The Devil's Reject, for example, and I guess, using this as an example, but I guess for all the songs, when you were writing these, this album, did you go back and watch the movies again? Or when you're writing the lyrics, did you go back and watch the movie to try to get some inspiration? Or were you just kind of going from your head of what happens in the movies? Because I'm sure, and there's no doubt you've seen Halloween like a million times.
Right.
I just wonder
if
you went back to keep it kind of fresh and maybe find something you didn't, a different perspective on it.
Well, I chose these movies because I honestly, I know them like the back of my hand. Yeah. And I've, to me, like, these kind of movies are like favorite records, Every once in a while I'll put, Through Being Cool on from Save the Day,
sure.
Just because, whatever. It's just a record that I revisit when I revisit it once every couple months. So honestly, these movies, anytime I see them on or I'm bored and I put something on, it'll, most likely in horror, it'll be one of those movies. But definitely when we were sitting there going through and writing the riffs or trying to gain inspiration, we'd have that shit on in the background just as like a visual backdrop to try to pull something out of us, or remember that, like, you know, in The Crow, you know, Eric Draven at one point is on top of, you know, the roof of the building playing guitar. I was like, well, dude, we got to put a guitar solo in this song to sort of totally, homage man. That kind of thing. And, you know, I think that, you know, watching Friday the 13th as we were putting it together, I'm realizing that, wow, at the end, it's such a cool thing that, you know, you think she's safe in the canoe, and there's this beautiful Harry Manfredini score playing in the background. Then all of a sudden, Jason jumps out of the water, and as I'm watching, I'm like, wouldn't it be so cool if we ended the song like that, ended it like the end of the movie? So definitely watch them again or had them on in the background to see what else it could pull out of me.
Right. Very, very cool. It reminds me a little bit of, this has got to be at least 10 years ago. I think it was the band Dirty Projectors. They covered Damaged by Black Flag. They covered the entire record, but they covered it without listening to it. Like they covered it like based on how they remembered it, like in their heads.
That's
like
cool.
They haven't heard it in 15 years. Well, you'd think it would be cool. I'm not a huge fan of it. Like maybe that's like, you know, I'm trying to think of a horror movie reference of like, you know, something you just don't touch, but you know what I mean? But like,
right.
It's the idea of how your memory of something in the reality of what it is, you know, it's like when you look at all that Mandela effect stuff, when people would swear that in Forrest Gump, he says, life is like a box of chocolates. But he doesn't. He says life was like a box of chocolates.
Right.
You know? So there's those kinds of things that you misremember, especially happens in movies and with quotes. So that's just why I asked that question, because I think you know, everyone's memory of something is different. And apparently, from what I've heard, when you remember something that happened, you don't actually remember it, the event. You remember the last time you remembered it. So it's kind of like this big long game of telephone. Yeah, I read this article. I don't know, maybe it's bullshit, but that's what and it makes sense why your memories sort of degrade. And, you know, I remember like this show we played. It was maybe the first time we ever played in Southern California as a band. And I'm sure you remember the first time you got to play in Southern California, because it's a big deal.
Of course.
It's a huge deal,
right,
especially for us being from the eastern part of the United States and Canada. So we played in Corona, California at the, I think it's called the Showcase Theater or Showplace Theater. I don't remember. It's Corona, California. And when I remember it back in my head, it's like a sold out show, people going crazy, like the most insane show like you've ever seen, right?
Right.
I recently found a VHS tape of that show. There is no more than 45 people there. And they are standing there watching us. And maybe there's like five kids dancing. But, you know, your memories change of like what something was, you know?
Dude, absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I've had the same experience, like thinking, oh, man, that show was just insane. And I watch a video like, oh, that wasn't really as insane as I remembered it. That's sometimes why I don't watch those videos. I like to remember it the way I want to remember it, right?
That's right. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. Damn, dude. Well, dude, thanks for doing this. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know you probably have lots of stuff to do this week, you know, with press and everything else. A couple more things, though. You have some insanely cool and very different guests and features on this album. We got Randy from Finch, which, you know, makes some sense. Less Than Jake playing horns. That's a bit out of left field. And Phoenix TX. That's a band name I haven't heard in a while. Talk to me about these cameos, and maybe there's some other ones I didn't hear about.
Yeah, dude. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I guess, you know, from talking to me and some of my references, I'm sure you can see at heart, I'm a pop punk kid. I'm a ska guy. That's what I grew up on.
Nice, nice.
And, you know, I was huge into the drive-thru record scene. You know, I would buy whatever they put out, and still some of those are my favorite bands. And, you know, two of my favorite bands from that era, Phoenix TX I remember seeing them with Blink all the time whenever I would go see them. And Finch was, you know, one of the first bands like that, you know, had some screaming that was sort of combining. It was like, you know, the emo and the pop punk stuff. And so for those, I randomly met Randy from Finch when he was living back in Salem, Massachusetts when I was there.
He's a great dude. I love him.
He's a great dude. I remember mentioning that I was going to do this. He's like, oh, yeah, I love Shane. So I'm glad you guys are buds.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we've been friends for about, I don't want to say about 2 years. And he moved back to L.A. And when we were writing this song called The Jig Is Up, And again, Finch has always been an influence on me melodically. I was like, dude, this chorus is very like Perfection Through Silence from What It Is to Burn. I was like, let's get Randy to play guitar on this song. And I called him up and he was so down to do it. And he really likes Ice Nine Kills. So that was really awesome.
Nice.
Then with Phoenix TX, you know, we were playing Slam Dunk Fest. I'm sure you guys have played it.
Yes, many years
ago. In the UK.
Yeah.
And Phoenix TX was on the bill, and I ended up, you know, becoming friends with those guys, hanging out one wild night, I think it was in Leeds, and just sort of kept in touch with them. And then, I don't know, about 6 months ago, I thought, you know, Will has mentioned that, you know, he'd love to write sometime. So I went to his buddy's studio, and his name is Joe, and he's got a really cool setup in the back of his house. He's got like a little sort of almost like, you know, just standalone area where he does all of his recordings. And we ended up writing a song together, the chorus for what ended up being It Is the End. So I got him to do the vocals on it. And again, you know, it's like working with people that you grew up being inspired by was such an awesome experience, you know?
Totally, man.
And then with this song, It Is the End, when we were writing it, I was like, dude, this is a song. It's about it's about Pennywise the Clown, and it has that circus vibe. I was like, dude, it would be so perfect if a band like, you know, Real Big Fish or Less Than Jake played the horns on this. And through Dave Shapiro, who books Less Than Jake, my manager Mike Mowry, you know, is good friends with Dave, and just a shot in the dark, just like, let's ask Less Than Jake if they do it. And they like got back right away. They're like, this is so cool, like no heavy band has ever asked us to do anything like this. And they ended up like recording it in like a couple of days in between two European tours.
Wow.
Like they went out of their way.
Really cool.
And you know, you've toured forever, you know, when you come back from a European tour, the last thing you want to do is anything, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Right. So they got it together and they just killed it on the track, and it gives it this really cool vibe. And that's also the one that Will from Phoenix TX is on.
Nice,
and
nice.
We also got my friend Tony from Mest to
really?
Sing one song.
Oh, I didn't know
yeah.
that. Oh, crazy.
And you know, that was like another one of my favorite pop punk bands growing up who had played at that show. That sort of changed my life when I started the band
with Goldfinger. Wow.
Right.
It really has come full circle.
So full circle. And then we have Jeremy Schwartz singing on one track. He started the band with me and hasn't been in the band for, you know, almost 10 years, which was really cool.
Oh, so he came back. That's cool. Yeah.
So he came back. Yeah, it was cool, you know, especially for like the old Ice Nine Kills fans who remember his voice being on recordings. And then the last one, this girl, Chelsea Talmadge, who's an actress. She, you know, had a small role on the Stranger Things show. And she's just had a beautiful voice. And because of that and sort of the connection with like, you know, horror and sci-fi, we thought it would be such a cool little treat.
Very cool.
So those are the guest spots.
Very cool. Okay, so you guys, the record's coming out on Friday. You guys are gearing up for a few CD release shows, and then a tour with Atreyu and Memphis Mayfire. Talk to me about that stuff. What can people expect? A lot of new songs already, or are you kind of working them in slowly? What's the plan?
We're going to work them in slowly. We definitely, you know, have already released two over the summer. We're going to play A Grave Mistake, which just came out a couple weeks ago. We're going to introduce another song that's going to be released with a video shortly after the album comes out, like a week into it. And yeah, I'm just really excited to get out there and play play these new songs. We've got a bunch of cool things and events. Tonight, we are going to have a listening party at Michael Myers' house in Pasadena, California, which is pretty cool.
How do you logistically work that out? How's that
happen? So there's a gallery called the Sugarman Gallery that is basically attached to the Michael Myers house in Pasadena, and they have a ton of movie memorabilia and unbelievable behind the scenes original photographs from the movie, and we worked it out with them. So they're going to host that, and then we have something in Salem, Massachusetts, which is sort of perfect for the environment
Absolutely.
Of the album.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing a theater screening of The Silver Scream, the film that accompanies the music videos, and going to do like a Q&A with the cast there. And then to sort of top it all off, we're going to be doing a acoustic performance in the garage from the house from Scream. That last scene in Scream where Rose McGowan,
of course.
Gets
door,
crushed by the garage. So we're going to be doing that in Santa Rosa, California, at the end of the month, and then just a bunch of great shows in between. Playing the Palladium, playing in Easton, Pennsylvania. We're playing a bunch of places. It's going to be awesome.
That's very, very cool. No, and it's very cool. You guys take your bands so seriously, and that you do a lot of cool stuff that. Because you guys are almost like, people talk about concept albums unless you're doing this, but in some ways you're a concept band.
It's very true.
Because without the film and literature, influences and stuff, that's what your band is. That's what everyone talks about. So it's really good that you guys embrace that.
I thank you for that. Thanks a lot.
It's a lot of fucking work though, isn't it?
It's a lot of work, but it's working with stuff that I love, and the cliche, if you work with something you love or you do something you love, you don't really work. So that's most of the time how I feel. There obviously there are days, but I enjoy what we're doing
for sure, man. Well, thank you so much for taking the time during your busy week to speak with me, and anything else you want to tell the people before I let you go?
Thank you guys for the continued support, and you will be seeing us playing the Silver Scream at a theater or venue near you over the next 2 years. So come out and hang out with us.
All right. Two years of shows. Okay. I always play music at the end. I like to ask the guest when I can what tune I should play. I assume something from the new record. It will be out when this airs. So what should I play for the people?
I'd say play American Nightmare. It's a great kickoff to the album, and I think it'll close out the show nicely.
All right. Here is The American Nightmare by Ice Nine Kills on Lead Singer Syndrome. Thank you very much, Spencer. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Shane.
Sleep in. Dreams are normal, too. Going to bed at a regular time makes it easier for you to go right off to sleep.
Rest your head, here's a lullaby. Yeah.
was a jam, a ripping jam from Ice Nine Kills, and their new record is out now. I want to thank Spencer for taking the time out of the very busy release schedule. You know, you got this week where you got all this lead up to this record coming out, and you've worked so hard on it. So for him to take, you know, basically an hour out of his day to talk to me was very cool of him. So much love to him and everybody in the Ice Nine Kills camp. So yeah, go check out that record. What else? Hey, if you like this show, please tell a friend, tell a loved one, let them know we're celebrating milestones over here, 150 episodes. And if you really like the show and you want to help me out, do check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. Again, the link, leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. I promise you will get something very cool out of it. You will meet friends, and the bonus content alone is worth it. So check it out. And yeah, if you like the show also, you can write a review on iTunes. That does help me out too, apparently. Just give me 5 stars. All right, well, hey, I'm out of here, but I want to thank you again for everything. And next week, we will be back with a brand new podcast once again. So make sure you're subscribed, and have a great rest of your day. Peace and love. We'll see you next time. This is Shane. Take care of yourself and each other.